Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Greyer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, we will be talking with Erica Ambrin. Erica, originally from L.A., is a singer-songwriter and a private chef who now lives in Sonoma County. Later in the show, we will be playing one of her songs, Sugar, which is absolutely beautiful. Hello there.
How's it going? So happy to be here. Love you both.
We're so happy to have you on our show, Erica. We're very excited to hear more about your story and share your story with our listening audience. But before we move into this deeper conversation about your life and all of your talents, first we have news and events from Outbeat member and our engineer,
Greg Maralia.
This is Greg Maralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of October 2nd, 2022. On Wednesday last week, Virginia students across the state participated in a walkout to protest a series of anti-transgender policies proposed by the Virginia Department of Education under Governor Glenn Youngkin's administration. Students marched out of school carrying pride flags and holding signs supporting the transgender community. Students at Annandale High School chanted, quote, protect trans youth and, quote, say no to the DOE. Before a trans student spoke about their personal experiences not being affirmed by their parents. The walkout was planned through Pride Liberation Project. This is a group of over 500 LGBTQ students and allies from across the state. The group provided a walkout guide and instructions to students about how to get approval from their school's administrators before the walkout. The proposed policies require written permission from a student's parents before teachers can call them by their name or pronoun that they were not given at birth. But teachers will still be allowed to intentionally misgender students, even if parents submit all the required requests, citing a teacher's right to free speech. Teachers will also be required to share information about students' gender identity with their parents, thus potentially outing a student against their will. The policies also require students to use locker rooms and restrooms in accordance with their sex assigned at birth, play sports according to their sex assigned at birth, and participate in all other gender-segregated school activities, again, according to their sex assigned at birth. The policies are currently in public comment until October 26th. And in Katy, Texas last week, in a fascist protest against a drag queen bingo fundraiser at a church brought out counter-protesters in a show of force, condemning the gathering of hate groups. Protesters on both sides of the demonstration, which lasted for hours into the early evening, carried guns. Over 100 people lined opposite sides of the highway across from First Christian Church Katy, Disciples of Christ, with competing PA systems. The counter-protesters outnumbered the fascist-affiliated groups. Shouts of Christian condemnation competed with chants of support for the church and the bingo event's attendees. Authorities from the Texas Department of Public Safety and the Harris County Sheriff's Department responded to the protest. Last week, a call went out on social media from well-known fascist group Protect Texas Kids. This led by self-described Christian fascist Kelly Niedert. The call was to show up at the First Christian Church Katy to protest the fundraiser benefiting the ministry's Transparent Closet. This is a free boutique for LGBTQ young people in the conservative West Houston suburb. A Facebook post from Niedert read, quote, this church will be hosting a disturbing kid-friendly drag show bingo, complete with alcoholic drinks and special 18-plus ticket options. Our Houston friends are organizing a protest, and we will be joining them. These sexually explicit shows must stop happening in front of our children, end quote. News of the planned demonstration reached the Houston-based Scruton Anti-Fascist Committee, who organized the counter-protest. First Christian Church Katy was founded in 1979, and in 2006, the congregation voted to become an open and affirming congregation that is expressly open to and affirming of LGBTQ plus people. And in Florida, the Pride Center of North Florida was vandalized last weekend. Board members told WCJB News that the windows of the center, located in Gainesville, were smashed and a threatening note was left. though they didn't share the content of the note because of the ongoing investigation. Center Vice President James Brown thinks the perpetrators used rocks to break the windows, but police are still investigating. He said, quote, "Our Pride Center is a place where our community can come, be safe, and feel welcomed. Seeing the center vandalized in this way breaks my heart. This incident is exactly the reason why our community needs safe spaces. Your board at this Pride Center will keep working hard and pouring our love into this community and making this a safe place again," end quote. Pride Center President Tamara Perry Leonardo also shared a message of resilience. She said, quote, "We are heartbroken and undeterred. The Pride Center of North Central Florida remains committed to being a safe place, and this display of hatred has only strengthened our resolve to continue to show up with love for our beautiful community." Florida law enforcement officials are investigating the incident as a possible hate crime. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. And tonight, as our guest, we have Erica Ambrim. And we just want to thank you again, Erica, for taking your time out of your busy schedule to join us in studio tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really grateful.
I want to get started about how we met, Erica.
Okay.
Lakeisha, a friend, went up to state. Maybe you could tell the story better.
Yeah, so I was having a show at Jasper's, which is sadly closed now. And Lakeisha is a friend, the sister of a friend of mine. And she just came up to me and she was like, "Hey, this might be kind of a weird question, but have you ever thought about acting?" And I got really excited because I've actually been trying to dip my toes in acting and was thinking about going to community college just to see what I like. Maybe I might like directing or, you know, just wear different hats and see how I feel. And she said, "I have this woman that you should meet, and I think that you would be really good at it." So I hit Diana up right away. I completely just loved and enjoyed your energy. And I decided to try out for a play. And I'll be in Diana's next production coming up.
That's right. I'm so excited.
Well, what is your next production? Don't keep the listeners in suspense, Diana.
We Are Here to Stay. Our freedom, our choice. Right on, baby. So I am so happy to have you. And I love your energy, Erica. And I think everybody else loves your energy too, all the cast members. So we can't wait to get started and to see you on stage.
It's so fun. It's such a different experience, and still able to be, you know, just get emotions out by playing this part. Even though it's like a smaller part, I can still dip into things that help me to heal. And that's ultimately what I'm trying to do through any art form that I'm doing, is to heal myself and to heal others through that process. So I just thank you for the opportunity, because I didn't even think I was going to make it, honestly.
Oh, come on. You're excellent. You're going to be so great. So I could tell already. I mean, you're going to be the group leader, but I can tell already how people are drawn to you, Erica. And I hope you know that, but they're drawn to your energy. And you're so welcoming and so embracing of everybody. You know what I mean?
I appreciate you seeing that.
Yeah, yeah.
It took a lot of work to get to this space, but I'm just so happy that I'm able to live freely that way.
What do you mean it took a lot of work? Can you say more about that?
You know, it's just when you're finding yourself, it's kind of hard to let people in, especially just the way I grew up. And maybe we will touch on some of that. I have been really shielding myself and trying to protect myself. And you know, I think when I moved to Maui for 4 years, I was able to really spend a lot of time by myself and learning to love myself, even if I don't receive that same kind of love from others. And that in turn has made me be able to just live my life more openly and to let people in, because I don't know who this is who told me this, but like an older aunt or something told me that the only way you know if you can trust someone is by trusting them. And so you just have to have blind faith And you will get hurt because that's just human nature. But at the same time, it's more freeing to be able to just let yourself go and just trust that everything's going to be all right.
I love that. Yeah.
I love how you said at the same time.
Oh, we love talking deep with people. So that's a beautiful thing that you're open enough to just express that vulnerability, you know?
Yeah.
And and we worked on that in rehearsal too, about you and being vulnerable.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
So thank you. We get more into deeper into your life. That'd be great. So let our listeners hear more about you and about what you're doing in your life right now.
Okay. So yeah, you know, I moved to Sonoma County at the beginning of the pandemic. I still had a lease in Sacramento and I was dating my partner. We were actually long distance, not very far, Sacramento, a couple hours away, but we couldn't see each other all the time. And at the beginning of the pandemic, it was like, I wasn't working because I was working in a kitchen at the time and everything was just shut down. Nobody really knew what was going to happen. And my partner offered, hey, you were going to come here and stay after your lease was up anyways. Why don't you just come now? I mean, you know, what's stopping you? And I think that that really catapulted me into furthering my dreams in a different way. And I've become financially stable on my own account without having a boss or working in a big corporation or a kitchen. So I'm able to be a private chef and musician and a little bit of nannying on the side as well, and able to sustain my lifestyle that way. And I think a lot of people during the pandemic, either they, you know, went back to the jobs or they decided, hey, you know, I've been working years and years and years for other people's dreams, to make other people's dreams come true. And a lot of my friends figured, hey, let me put that same kind of time, energy, and even people with money into myself. And now they're more successful than they've ever been because the pandemic actually allowed them to take a chance on themselves and to put time and effort into their own dreams rather than someone else's. So I think that's what I've been doing. And it's been working out for me. I've been really well received with my music here and people love the food. I work with a winery here as well called Eric Kent Wines. And I am their private chef for all of their private events as well. So it's working out for me. I'm really happy.
Let me ask you a question. As far as being a chef, what are some of your signature dishes?
Number one on my list is my gumbo. If you've never had my gumbo, you don't know what you're missing. My grandma had this beautiful recipe. And of course, you know, I added my own little tweaks to it. But that, I would say that is my signature dish. I make it every Christmas and sometimes on New Year's Eve because I like to make a big pot and give a lot away as gifts. People love gumbo. But, you know, I really love doing Asian cuisine as well. I'm really good at that with those flavors because I really love sweet and savory. And a lot of those dishes have like spice, sweet, and savory. So yeah.
You're making me tear up, honey.
Why?
You are making me tear up without even tasting your food. It's just like, oh my gosh, that sounds so good.
I have to cook for you too one day. It's just like music for me. It's something that is universal, that everyone needs, that everyone loves, is food. And it brings people together just as music does. I think that's why I chose it as kind of like a backup plan for art. And I love it just as much as music. So.
And Cher, you're talking about is watering just listening to Erica. I mean, the photographs, the pictures of how she puts it together. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. So where did that come from, Erica, your cooking background?
So my mom, you know, I was in LA. I'm from Los Angeles and I was in LA and I was, you know, trying music. I had gone to some academy that turned out to be a huge scam, but I did learn a lot. And, you know, I was kind of like singing on Venice and like street performing and doing some performances here and there, but I really wasn't getting anywhere. A lot of people were asking me to lose weight. And it's really funny because at the time I was only 120 pounds And I was really young and in my 20s, and people would be like, could you lose 10 pounds? Like people that either wanted to sign me to a record deal or whatever. And my dad was put his foot down and was like, she's already small. If that's what you guys want from her, you're looking at her for the wrong reasons and we're not going to go for it. So my mom actually said, well, Erica, you need a backup plan. Why don't you be a nurse? She's a nurse. I have an uneasy stomach about that kind of stuff. I wish that I can be that kind of person and help people in that way, but it's just not in me. Like I would just be a hot mess. So I started researching and I found the Art Institute Culinary School in Sacramento. And so I went to culinary school and I learned a lot there. And the thing that I found out when I finished there was that people don't care about culinary school, just as people don't care about bartending school. When you go and you go to a restaurant and you're trying to get a part, let's say just as a line cook, they want to know that you've had experience in an actual restaurant. Because a lot of times students come in thinking that they know it all. And it's like, you really don't know anything unless you've had experience in a kitchen. So it took for someone to take a chance on me and get me that experience for me to get other really amazing jobs in the kitchen. Not that it was a waste of time because I did learn a lot of things, but first thing interviewers would say, first of all, we don't care about culinary school. What kitchens have you worked in? And I mean, that was like every interview and I couldn't get a job for a long time. And so I ended up bartending and working in front of the house. And then somebody gave me a chance in the kitchen. They're like, you're really good and efficient and you don't talk back and you just listen and do. It's kind of like militant back there in certain kitchens, you know, you need to just follow instructions, don't ask too many questions, and do what the main chef wants you to be doing. And they kind of love it that way. But I learned that real fast.
Wow. I never heard of that one before. I thought it'd be totally different with culinary school. You know, I thought that would be different.
I don't know, because you're a psychotherapist, right? So like with that, things like that, or like being a doctor or a lawyer, those degrees really matter. So that's so interesting for like art, something that is artistic. It doesn't have the same kind of weight, you know?
Yeah. And I'm just curious about those promoters or whoever they are, producers, around your weight. That just seems so bizarre to me. What a journey you've been on.
What's that?
The producers, the weight.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, that's a huge thing in Hollywood. And I've never been like super tiny, you know, but I look at pictures back then and I'm like, I was really small. Like I can't even imagine myself at this age being that small, you know. I just think they want you to look good on camera, and smaller people, you know, I guess the camera adds 10 pounds already. So they're like, you got to take off 10 to look okay in our eyes. But my dad was not having that at all. So,
well, kudos to your dad for that decision.
Yeah,
because there's so many people who look so unhealthy that are on the screen or in front of people performing because they're so thin. It's just kind of rips my heart out that they feel like they have to do that. So good for you doing things on your own terms, and good for your dad to have that vision and that forethought about, no, don't sell out like that.
Yeah, so. I love to eat. So you're not going to stop me from eating anytime soon.
Yeah, I hear you.
Right. So how is it different here? I mean, we'll talk about your partner later, but I'm just saying, how is it different here from Sacramento to here as far as you being able to sustain your life financially the way you want? How are you getting all of your connections?
You know, I think, you know, Sacramento is a, you know, it's the capital, it's a bigger city. And I actually, most of my time there live either in downtown or midtown, where it's like everything is popping, all the bars, restaurants and things. And everybody wants to be somebody. Like it's oversaturated with so many things. And there's so much great talent. There's so many people to collaborate with on shows and things of that sort. I think what sets me apart and why I'm able to get so many shows here is that there's not many people that look like me that live here. And so there's not many people that play my kind of music. There's a lot of folk music and, you know, there's a lot of blues bands or jam bands and things like that. I like to say, I don't put myself in any box, but I like to say I'm like more on the R&B soul music kind of front as far as my genre. And people really appreciate that because it's not something that they get a lot of here. So I think people are just like, we want that at our winery. We want that at our bar as well, because it creates a different experience for people. And it truly is just like a healing space. And I just did a show at this place called Wine Snob. And the way that they set it up is you have to reserve a table before you get there. And then they like pour you wine. There's a food truck, but it's focused on the music and the artist that is playing at the time. So there's no one talking while I'm singing a song. We kind of banter in between songs, but it's not so much, hey, you're the background music for our establishment while people are drinking. It's more like you're coming here to see this person and enjoy some wine at the same time. So I thought that that was really cool that they create that space for artists. And they said to me, we don't know how we're going to top that. I mean, everybody we've had so far is really talented, but it's nothing like that. And I think I just bring a unique experience to this part of California.
So if I were a listener right now and I heard you say, well, one of the reasons I get gigs is because no one looks like me and people don't know how you look, how would you describe yourself to the listener who doesn't know what you look like?
I'm a strong Black woman.
I love it. Go for it.
And also, I'm queer, and, you know, I just think that I give a different view of the world through my experiences. I mean, I might play some covers, but I write all of my own music and I draw from experience on my real life. So, you know, there's not that many Black people. There's not that much color here. And it's not that I haven't been well received here. You can't help where you are. I mean, even when I lived on Maui, there was more white people than Native Hawaiians that lived there or that were there tourists, right? So there weren't a lot of people that looked like me. Every time I saw a Black person, just like here, I'm like, my sister, my brother, I just go up to them and talk to them. And no one finds it to be weird, especially if they live here, because they want to have that community. They know that, you know, we're peppered out all over Sonoma County. And if we can be in the same space at the same time, it's a beautiful thing. So yeah, thanks for saying that, because they're probably like, what does she look like?
Yeah, we know the Black people are sparse around here, honey. Okay, so let's talk more about your coming to Sonoma County and how you and your sweetie got together.
So my a really great friend of mine who I have a show with this Friday, her name is Kayada. And we've been making music, and we pretty much, she's like the sister I always wanted. And we've been making music for about 11 years together. And my partner is actually a DJ, and is her DJ. She's a hip hop artist. And so she put on a show and made me the headliner for the show. And I came out from Sacramento and played the show. I believe it was at Whiskey Tip. And played the show, and I just already was crushing on her. You know, I had been single for about almost 5 years with no like romantic anything really. And so I was really drawn to her. And the next day I got a message from Kayada, and she said, yo, Diops wants to know, that's her DJ name, Diops. Diops wants to know if she can have your number. And I was like, what, for real? Like, for what, you know? And she's like, I think she like you, bruh. So, you know, I said, yeah, of course. And we've been talking ever since. So we did, like, I would come here every other weekend. She would come to Sacramento every other weekend. And we would only spend just like a couple days. And we did a lot of FaceTiming. And we really hit it off. We've been together for just over 3 years now. And I don't even know how I had a different partner before her. That's no shade to any of my exes or anything like that. I'm just saying that it's just so easy with her. And I think that we can both be our authentic selves, even when that doesn't look so pretty. And there's no judgment there. And it's always good to be able to just be exactly who you can be alone with your partner, because you're essentially coexisting with someone. And I think it's important to feel safe, and she makes me feel safe. And I think we do the same for each other. So
beautiful story. Now, you gave us her DJ name. What's her real name?
Colleen.
It's almost like it has the same ring as Jolene. Have you written a song about Colleen yet?
I have. It's called Perfect Fit. It's going to be on my next EP that I put out with the band. And that's so funny that you sang that, because I always sing that to her just as a joke, like, Colleen, because I love Dolly Parton.
Me too, honey. Ooh.
That's my girl, okay? So I actually do that all the time. So that's funny, Sherry, that you just did that.
Wow. That's good.
You could give us another couple lines of that if you want.
I was just joking. Often imitated, never duplicated, so.
No, I mean your song, though.
Diana wants to hear you sing. That's what she's alluding to.
So, goodness, y'all gonna put some...
We're gonna see Sugar in a minute, so yeah.
Well, why don't you talk a little bit about Sugar, the music that we're gonna play at break. Why don't you tell us how it came to be? It is stunningly gorgeous, and I can't wait for the listeners to hear it.
Thank you. So Sugar, I was on the porch with a bunch of friends with my guitar, and I was actually just freestyling, funny enough. And, you know, I had these lyrics coming out, and, you know, I said, give me some of that sugar. And I was like looking for a line, and one of my best friends, Grant, he's like a mountain man. He's amazing. And he was like, be the sweetness in my coffee. And so, and he will tell you, like, he never is too shy to tell someone that is his line. He wrote that part. And then it became one of the most popular songs that people always wanted to hear. It's super simple guitar parts, but, you know, kind of just get straight to the point. And it's actually about a woman that I was dating who wasn't very nice to me. Oddly enough, her name was Erica. I should have known not to date someone with my same name, but she wasn't very nice to me. So, but I could tell she was like, had this wall up. So the song was really about her. Like, I want to see your sweet side. Like, give me the sugar. I don't want the salt. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of how that song was born, but it's a pretty funny story. Shout out to Grant.
Shout out to Grant. I like that.
He say, I want that line. That's it.
Yeah. I was like, well, that's actually pretty good.
We have like a minute or so before we have to take a music break. So could you give us a couple more lines? Just tell us some of the lines, like what Grant made up. And
like, you want me to sing?
No, because we're going to hear you sing in a minute, but maybe just a couple more lines.
Oh, yes. So Grant said, be the sweetness in my coffee at the start of my day. And I know you dig, and I know I dig your vibes, but who wouldn't? And the music in our heart continues to play. It's just kind of like a sassy little way of like trying to get at a girl, you know? People really love that song, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Beautiful. So we're going to take our music break now, and everyone's going to be delightfully treated to your song, Sugar. And we'll see everybody on the other side. You give me that thrill. you just joined us, that was Erica Ambrin singing her original song, Sugar. Wasn't that just so delicious? Welcome back, everybody. And we are in studio talking with Erica and learning about her life and her music and her cooking and all the stuff that she does in the world.
Yes, yes, yes. Beautiful song. I love that. I love your voice, Erica.
Thank you so much.
I really love your voice. It's so heartfelt. And I can't wait for people to hear you sing, We Are Here to Stay.
Thank you. Yes.
That's going to be great at the production.
Yeah.
So anyways, I wanted to have a few follow-up questions I want to ask about. I can't believe you're out of a relationship for 5 years.
Yeah.
You are just so loving and open and kind. So I want to know about what happened during that time in your life.
I was in a relationship. I was actually engaged, and it was kind of a toxic thing on both ends. There was a lot of love there, but that just wasn't enough to sustain the relationship in a healthy manner. And so I got an offer to be a manager at a sex shop on Maui. My best friend at the time, her grandmother is like a legend there. Her name is Lila Sherman. She opened the Love Shack, which was the only sex shop on Maui. And kind of advocated for it, went to court because it's very taboo there to talk about those things or to have those kinds of shops. But, you know, she did like these talks and stuff like that. And she's like, this is healthy. You can't like shun this. This is how we're made. This is healthy to have healthy sex lives. And got this place in Kihei. And she is just actually turned 87. So a few years back, she was like, I'm getting too old to do this. So she asked her granddaughter, who's my best friend at the time. And when I went through the breakup, she was like, I will buy you a ticket to Maui right now if you come and help me with the shop. And obviously, I jumped right onto that. And the thing about Hawaii, or at least where I was, there's not that many people that are out there. There's actually more men than women there. And it wasn't necessarily for lack of trying. I think it was just, that's not what I was there for. I was there to work. I was there to hone in on my craft, to write music. You know, I had a band going over there. I did a lot of the hotels and had a lot of residencies there. And I think I was just supposed to focus on that, surfing, helping out with the shop. And the opportunities just never came. I think I kissed a tourist once and she left the next day. So, you know, it wasn't really about that. I say that that's where I really became a woman, because we all think we're grown when we turn 18 or whatever. And you're really not. There's a lot that you don't know about, a lot of new experiences and things that you have to deal with as an adult. And I think spending all that time by myself and learning to be happy, just being in my solitude, is what helped me to become the woman that I am today. So yeah, it definitely wasn't for lack of trying. And then definitely was a lot of love, just platonic love. I made a lot of friends there. I can always go back. And yeah, I think I just was meant to love myself for those years.
Beautiful story. Yeah, good for you. It's always important to love thyself.
Yes, absolutely.
And so if that journey took you to here, we're all blessed. We're all blessed.
Yes, I went back to Sacramento and then ended up here. So I realized I just don't want to live in a big city anymore. It's just not my days. I like peace. I like quiet. I like nature. And so this is the perfect place to be. And I'm close enough to the ocean still. So
yay, Eric is going to be in our area forever. It's your area now, because you have more connections than we have right now.
I wouldn't say that. I just, you know, play a lot of shows, yeah. You know.
A lot of fans. We got to see Erica play, too, and it was good.
So good. Speaking of shows, I'm wondering, what's coming up this month for you? This month of October, what's coming up?
So this October, I've got a few things going on. I'm going to be at Golden State Cider in Sebastopol in the Barlow. They're doing a thing called Cider Mimosa Sundays, where they make mimosas out of ciders. And I am also going to be at Crooked Goat on the 16th. So that's two shows in one day on the 16th. And then I have my residency that I do every last Saturday of the month in Jenner. And then I'll be accompanying my wonderful lady, DJ Diops, for her LGBTQIA and Friends dance party that she'll be holding every month. It's called Lush. It's at the Flamingo Resort in Santa Rosa. And it's just a dance party for all of the gays and the gals and the guys to get together and kind of just celebrate together. She was doing this Lush at Jasper's, but since they closed down, we moved it on over to Flamingo. So come out to those. That's going to be actually September 24th. So I don't know if this will be in time for the show, but.
No, but you said once a month she's going to do that. So what would be the date in October?
It's every other month. So it actually would be November, right?
So sometime in November, and if people are interested in that, they could go to probably the Flamingo website and find out about it probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the vintage space from the Flamingo.
You've done these parties before. I'm curious what kind of people show up there.
You know what? It's people from all walks of life, older people, younger people, but it's actually really a lot of, you know, LGBTQIA plus community that show up for this, because there's not really that many things that are geared specifically a safe space, and obviously straight people are there too, but it's really a mixed crowd. And the type of music that she plays, she'll play like some Afro beats, reggae, a little bit of hip-hop, some dance music. So I think there's something there for everybody, really. And I saw like a group of older lesbian ladies that came in, and they were just jamming out. I just love to see it. And for us to all be able to be in those spaces together. And it's not like, oh, you know, like, what are you guys doing here? Like, that's what I love about Sonoma County. Like, older and younger groups of people can actually share spaces. And it's not like an odd thing. It's pretty cool.
People are always looking for a place to party, have fun. So
yeah,
I've been seeing some of the videos, the TikToks of Colleen, and she does some beautiful work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with all those keyboards and stuff, she's a real deal DJ. It's like all those knobs. It's like, oh my gosh.
She's really into tech. So she's really good at all that kind of stuff. She really helps out with all my social media and everything. So I'm very, very blessed and lucky that she manages me, because I would be going crazy with all the things that I have going on. So
wonderful. So we're going to switch gears a little bit and learn about more of you as a child, maybe.
Okay.
Coming out. I don't know when you came out. When did you know that you were who you are? And how do you identify, and what are your pronouns?
So my pronouns are she, her. I identify as a lesbian. And I came out when I was 14, actually. I think I knew much before then, just because like I had an obsession with Angelina Jolie, and it wasn't like my other obsessions. So I didn't want to go into high school and have to hide who I was anymore. And I think a lot of my friends knew, we just didn't really talk about it. And I actually came out to my dad and my stepmom, and my dad freaked out. He actually, I won't get too much into detail, but he, let's just say, he let me have it physically and also verbally, and really just broke my heart, because I guess that he would be the one, because I'm the only girl. I have five brothers. And I'm the only girl, and I'm his baby girl, you know, so I figured that he would be more gentle with me. And he actually freaked out, which he has now apologized for that particular moment profusely, actually. So there's no harm there. But at the time, I don't think that he can handle it. My stepmom actually was the one who I thought was going to be worse about it. And she was fully accepting. And my mom did the whole thing where she cried and said, what have I done? Like, what did I do wrong, kind of thing. And I just tried to explain to her, you know, it has nothing to do with you. And I could keep hiding this, but I need to be able to be who I am, especially a person with my kind of personality. It's really hard to hide something that big about yourself. And I just never saw anything wrong with it. Even though in society and in media and stuff, they always put a negative connotation around those kind of things, especially back in those days. But I never saw it as that, because I know it made me feel good, and it was love. And I think that love can be in many different forms. And if you're not hurting anyone else, then I don't see how that can be wrong. And if God is love, because I grew up in a church household, if God is love, then why is this wrong? You know, I kind of really was confused by that. And the way my dad reacted was not out of love. I think the way he reacted was out of fear. And fear of what? I really don't know. And I still don't know to this day. But I think he didn't want his baby girl to be into women. But it never stopped. So
Erica, when you say you came out at 14, did this event with your dad happen when you were 14?
Yes, it actually was immediately. Because at first I said, I like girls. And he's like, no, I want to hear you say it. Like, he made me say I am gay. And then he just started laying into me. And, you know, a lot of Black households, you know, I don't know if you call it corporal punishment, whatever kind of punishment it is, you know, we got whippings, right? Grandma would go get the switch and let you have it, or you would get the belt. And this was different. It wasn't that kind of like ritualistic, which I see it as now, with like trying to heal my trauma from that kind of stuff. He was laying into me with his fist. It was his immediate reaction after he made me say I am gay. And he just laid into me and was like cursing me. And so, yeah, I was 14 and my dad never hit me like that before. So I was really hurt.
No brothers to rescue you. Nobody was around.
I mean, everybody, just the way our household was run, there was nothing that anybody could do. Just like when my brothers would get whippings and maybe I didn't feel like it was just, there was nothing that I could do. I mean, we were all younger. You know, I had an older stepbrother, but he wasn't going to protect me. You know, he was doing his own things to harm me as well. Things that he shouldn't have been doing. So he's not going to do that. I don't know if you kind of feel, I don't know what we can really talk about on here. So you know what I'm getting at. So.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. So sorry that you had that experience. And here you are at 14 being so courageous at 14 to just share yourself openly. And that's the response you got.
You know, I wouldn't change it for the world, because I felt like I was suffocating, you know, the years before that I already knew it. And I think that I just said, like, I'm too young, you know, to like, even really know. So I wanted to make sure, because even though I didn't know exactly what the reaction was going to be, I knew that it was going to be hard on everyone. And, you know, I still wanted to protect my family, but at a certain point I have to look out for myself. And I'm really glad that I didn't wait until later.
But you knew, sound like you knew way sooner.
Yeah, probably. And when I was playing house, I always wanted to be dad. So, you know.
Well, how old were you when you were playing house?
Probably like 5 or 6, you know, just with friends. And we weren't doing much in there, but, you know, we were kissing and stuff. And like, I always wanted to be like with the girls, you know, I mean, I just kind of knew. But how do you, when you don't have words to explain that, or when you don't see that, you think that there's something wrong with you or that you're doing a bad thing. And, you know, kids experiment. That's just a part of it. Some kids might have experimented and realized that they were straight. You know, you just don't really know. But I knew that I was into girls. I had a huge crush on my third grade teacher, Miss Flowers. Like, she was just the most. And I mean, I would want to be in class late. I would want to go as early as I could to go see Miss Flowers before class, before everybody else took her attention away from me. Like, I mean, it was pretty obvious to me.
That's cute. Cute story, third grader. So what about 14 and up? What happened after that big scene with your dad? When did you leave home?
So I shortly, you know, things got really like hostile in the house. And I actually ran away from home when I was about 15 years old. And I went away and I went to a friend's house just for a weekend. And their mom like kind of knew my story and like wishes that there was something that they can do about the abuse and stuff. And so they were like, you know, I can't hold you here for long. You could stay for the weekend, but legally I can't do anything about it. I'm really sorry. And so I'm thinking they're not going to care. I left, you know, on Friday. They know my friends. They never called any of my friends. So I went to school and my stepmom and my dad were there in the principal's office with somebody to take me to a psychological center, because I had said to someone that was there, they were like saying, don't run away. They were like living with us at the time. It was actually my stepbrother's girlfriend, which is kind of strange to me now to think about that she was living with us, but her family didn't want her dating a Black guy. And so my stepmom was like, you can come and live with us, and like gave her my room. Just a weird, weird story that I have. So I was pretty close with her and she was like, don't leave, Erica. And I was like, if I stay here one more day, I'm going to do something that I don't want to do, you know? And I left. And so she told my stepmom and my dad that, and they, I don't know if they were truly concerned, but they used that as leverage to get me put into a facility. So I was put into a facility and I had to stay there for evaluation for a couple of weeks, actually, and was in a program. And then when I got back, I was released and I asked my mom to come and get me, and she came to get me. And then so I lived with my mom for a short time.
So were they concerned about suicidality, or were they concerned that they wanted you to get converted to heterosexuality?
I really think that it was a manipulation, me looking back. I don't think that they really thought that I was going to do anything, but I think what I said was like, okay, we can, like, because you can't say those kind of things and I'm under their care. So they were going to put me somewhere. I don't think they ever tried to get me to change. They never asked for me to be straight or anything like that. They just kind of looked at me in disgust. Not my stepmom though. So I want to make that clear that she was just like, you are who you are. You like who you like. And I think she had like, she was the one who had like gay guy friends and stuff like that. My dad was more of the one that was like, my daughter's not going to be gay, you know? But once I came out, what are you going to do? You can't beat me every day. So you just kind of have to deal with it. And you can say, I can't bring my girlfriends to your house, or you can set up those kind of boundaries, but you can't change it now. It's the cat's out of the bag. So
tremendous story.
Yeah. And the journey. Yeah. And look at you now, you know, it's like, hey, you made it, you know, you're loved by so many. Right on.
You said your dad apologized later profusely. So do you have a better relationship with him now?
Is it, you know, my dad, unfortunately, is schizophrenic and manic bipolar. So I haven't actually talked to him in quite a while. He got himself in some trouble. I won't go into too much detail about that, but I haven't been able to see or talk to him in, I would say, last couple of years. At this time when he apologized, though, he was not in a manic state and was taking his medication and stuff. So we were able to have a coherent conversation, I would call it. And, you know, it was one of those conversations that you have every once in a while with like your parents, that you kind of break down situations and how it was on your end. And they kind of say how it was on their end. And he said he was just scared for me because I'm already a Black woman, which we know how Black women are treated in America. And then I want to add, not that I want to, I am who I am, but this is just how he put it. I want to add gay, Black, and a woman, which puts me in even more danger as far as he's concerned. And I'm like, well, you would never know, because I felt scared of you in that moment afterwards. And he said it was just a reaction. He doesn't even know where it came from. He already knew, and he didn't know he would react that way when he heard me say it. It kind of just happened. And he just said that I didn't deserve that, and that he loves me no matter what, and that he really wants me to know that there's nothing wrong with me.
Those are nice words. Definitely nice words that you can remember.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just want to mention your mom, because you had a visit with her recently and it seemed like you both were having such a wonderful time.
Yes, I love my mom so much. She definitely came around. Like I said, when I first came out to her, and obviously I was very young, she was crying and thought that she did something wrong. And that's the reason why I was that way. And, you know, I obviously explained to her that that's not the way this works. And eventually she came around. And I just think, you know, with different generations, it takes one person in the family to break those generational curses, to allow other people to live freely. Like, I have a cousin and my mom is really close with my cousin, and he's gay, and his mom has a huge problem with it, like still to this day. And he's grown, you know, I mean, she obviously loves him. She talks to him, but she doesn't want to
if he tries on a certain pair of pants that are a little tight or something, she like looks at him in disgust and stuff. And my mom tries to say, hey, he is who he is. You might as well just accept him for who he is, because he's not going to change, you know, and it really has nothing to do with you. Your job is to love that child regardless, you know, and it's so awesome to see how far she has come. You know, she loves Colleen. Like, she probably loves Colleen more than me at this point. They just get along so well. And interesting enough, they're pretty close in age. So,
oh,
they, you know, Colleen's 16 years older than me. And I think my mom's only like 2 years older than Colleen. So they got their own little banter and stuff that they talk about, which I think is really, really amazing. But yeah, she's totally just down for it now. And makes me so happy.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
So this last part of the interview, we'd like you to give some advice, just whatever you want to offer, a piece of your heart to the listeners.
Absolutely. I think a theme right now and something that I want to share is to love yourself deeply, because you have to live with yourself for the rest of your life, and you are your longest project, your longest piece of art. And I think that when you love yourself and you love yourself just as deep as you would love a lover or even a child, different things come out of that, and you're able to walk through life with a different kind of energy. There's so many things that are put in media and, you know, just the way that the world works that lets you feel like you're not good enough, that you as you are, you need to be smaller, or you need to be more talented, or you need to be, you know, posting online all the time, or whatever. You need to be good at everything, whatever it may be. You being uniquely you is what sets you apart from everyone else, and it's what makes you the most beautiful. So just learn to love yourself, be gentle with yourself, talk nicely to yourself. If you wouldn't say it to your child, don't have those negative thoughts in your head. You know, if you wouldn't say it to your partner, don't say it to yourself. And I think when you're able to do that, life is just so much more free, and people see that and they are drawn to that, and they want to know how you got that. And it's not easy, because we all go through trauma and we all go through things that make us feel like we're not good enough. But I'm here to say that you are whole, perfect, and complete just the way that you are, as is. And you know, I try to tell myself that every day, and it's not easy, but it gets easier. Is that good?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Erica.
Yes.
Check out Erica's website at ericaambrin.com. That's E-R-I-C-A-A-M as in mother, B-R-I-N as in Nancy.com. We want everyone to remember that, like Erica, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, your talents, and your words of wisdom, you can make our world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then, good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can. Try what have you done today to make you feel
So do it today, yeah, 'cause I can see you.
October is LGBTQ History Month, and this month we have a special Outbeat Extra edition of Outbeat News in Depth with special guest author and LGBT historian Eric Marcus from MakingGayHistory.com. We'll be talking about LGBTQ history in the 1970s. Join us at 8 p.m. on Sunday, October 30th. And don't forget to tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Music with Cheryl Kabanuck. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio, 104.9 FM, Sonoma County's NPR station. Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCBFM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCBFM Roanoke Park and KRCGFM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.